Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, one of the most popular poker pros on Twitter, Jean-Robert Ballond, a man with over 30,000 followers on Twitter. Most people who follow him are trying to figure out, how does this guy keep living like a millionaire, even though he's constantly broke? You may remember Jean-Robert from 4 years ago when he was on Survivor in China. Now he's living the broke living life, and we'll talk about that with us and about his new poker site a little bit later on in the show. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the tables have been put away and the chairs as well outside the poker room are gone after the completion of the first ever Gateway Poker Classic. Meanwhile, my partner Dennis Phillips, who was here for part of it and has been traveling to other poker tournaments as well, is back home in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
Oh, I'm enjoying it. It's nice to relax for a little bit. It's been a busy couple of weeks.
Let's see, you went to Reno, and then you were here, and then you were off to the Choctaw Casino down in Oklahoma. But while you were here, you and I actually got to sit at the same table in a tournament. I don't think that's ever happened since 08 when you went to the main event. It used to happen occasionally here when we would play smaller tournaments here at Harrah's St. Louis. Has it ever happened in a bigger event since then?
I hadn't really thought about that, but that might be the first time that we have. And I guess I need to educate you about the color of the chips, too.
Yeah. Dennis and I got involved. It was in the Six Max tournament last Wednesday. We both actually registered. It started at noon. We both registered about 5 or 10 minutes late, and they put us at the same table. And I was at seat 3, and Dennis was at seat 4, and we got involved in a hand. And the purple chips here, which are the 500s, are a dark purple and look very much like the black 100 chips. So in a hand where Dennis and I were heads up, I meant to bet 400 and fired out a bet of 1,200 because I grabbed two purples and two blacks instead of four blacks. And at that time, I think the pot was 275, maybe 300. And he shot me a look like, what are you doing?
But the bad part was I flopped top pair and I turned the nut flush draw to go with it. So I had ace jack of clubs. With two clubs out there, a queen on the turn, I had the even with you betting 1,200. I ended up having to call it. As it turned out, the turn gave you top two, and you took the pot down. But I sure would have liked to bet about 300 instead of 1,200.
Yeah, I'll tell you. You know, as soon as I fired it out there, that's when I saw. Oh, those are purple instead of black. But I didn't move because, you know, if I say, oh, I didn't mean to bet that much. First of all, it's you and me, so the table is going to be entertained by whatever else is going on there because they all know us. And I really didn't know what to do there. And I've also seen it in tournaments where somebody's done something like that and then acted like they wanted to pull it back and they're angle shooting, which was not the case. Mine was a genuine mistake. So I will tell you this. I will tell you this. If you at that point had said, I'm all in, I'm laying down top two there.
Okay, well, I'll remember that for future, but the odds on that happening without a set are pretty slim.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyway, we both played a bunch of the events here over the course of the 10 days of the Gateway Poker Classic. We both went over. Neither of us cashed in any of these. I also had a little case of the run bads and the cash games like the 510 PLO that was going on here. There was a lot of cash game action. Some people were disappointed with some of the turnouts for some of the events here, but I can tell you that they had over $570,000 in prize pool. Over 2,700 people participated in the tournaments. The 7 p.m. no limit hold'em events, which were the $125 buy-in, were consistently getting fields of 150 to 250 every night for 10 straight nights. The main event which took place on Saturday, I had speculated we'd get a field of 83. We ended up with 118, and we thought that was a pretty good turnout. The prize pool for that, $114,000. The first place went to a guy named Tom C. from St. Peter's, Missouri, who took down first place for a little over $34K, and some other regulars from the St. Louis poker room here at Harrah's, like DB and Pizza Greg and some of the other guys, Travis and Ricky and some of the others, made the final table, and they all cashed in for, I think a min cash there was something like $3,000. So congratulations to everybody who did that. And also congratulations to Denise and the crew here at Harrah's St. Louis for pulling off their first independent big poker series. And also to Jimmy Sommerfeld's crew. Jimmy wasn't here, but half of his crew was here from Poker Tournament Consultants. They were the ones who ran the event, just as they do during the April circuit events here at Harrah's St. Louis. And you can't find a more solid poker crew of dealers and supervisors than these folks, right?
Absolutely agree with that. Jimmy always runs a quality tournament. I actually was down where the other half of his crew was at, down in Oklahoma. But this was the first time that they'd had an independent tournament series run in St. Louis. I think they did very well. There was a lot of competition, a lot of other things going on, be it in Oklahoma, Las Vegas, or whatever. Consistently had good turnouts at the night. The tournament was very well ran. Yeah, I don't see a downside to this, and I'm hoping that it just get bigger and better.
Yep.
Remember, this is the first time.
By the way, the senior event here had 149 people in it. That's pretty good turnout for a senior event in St. Louis, and I think everybody was happy. The people who played in the cash games seemed happy to have all the tables filled. When I was here last Friday, they got a 23-table poker room here. Every table was full by 6 o'clock on Friday night. Not to mention all the people who were in that day's tournament and that evening's tournament and, you know, the PLO tournaments that were going on as well. So it was good. I do want to address one complaint that we got a couple of emails from listeners of this show and just general people in St. Louis who play poker here complained about the fact that the rake, which is normally a max of $4 per hand, was increased to $5 a hand, which is the same thing that happened during the circuit event the last couple of Aprils. And, you know, I know that rake is something we've talked about often on the show and something that players need to be aware of. But I also think that when you have a special event like this and so much else going on, you have to perhaps give up a little bit of consideration there. And I'm not doing this as an apologist for Harrah's in any way. The real part of this that you need to know is we're spoiled in St. Louis. I mean, Dennis, you have played a lot of other places, and so have I. I don't know any place else where the rake is $4 max. Every place else has $5, and some places $6 and $7 max, if it's not higher than that.
Yeah, there's some of them, especially outside of the country, that are higher than that. There are none that are less than that. And if you get into a time rake, I mean, you're talking $7, $8, $9 on a time rake, too.
Yep.
So, absolutely. The $4, and if they keep it that way, that's absolutely great. But if occasionally they have to bump it to $5 for a special occasion, I don't think we have the right to complain about it. I, you know, obviously would like to keep it as low as possible. Any poker player would. But these guys are doing this for a reason.
Yep.
And if we wanted to continue to bring in people like Jimmy Sommerfeld and continue to run the quality tournaments, well, you have to just go with it.
Yep, I agree. One other thing I have to mention here is the Bad Beat jackpot got hit on Friday night. I knew that because when I played the Saturday main event with this table that I started at, the guy who had gotten 50% of the jackpot, because he got the bad beat, was at my table. He had three bet preflop with queens. The flop came queen 9-8 with two clubs. He hits quad queens on the turn and checks. He had bet the flop. He got called by one player. He checks the turn. The river is the 10 of clubs, and the other guy had been in there with the jack 7 of clubs for the gut shot straight flush. Took down a pot that was probably about $700, but then they chopped up a bad beat jackpot of $130,000, and the guy who had gotten beaten with quad queens made $65K in a 1-2 game.
So you don't think he minded the guy catching the card?
He free rolled into the main event the next day and was very, very happy about that. We need to change the name of that because it's a bad beat jackpot, but the bad beat comes if you're playing in non-bad beat jackpot games. Like if he was playing in the 5-10 game where they don't take the dollar out of each hand for the jackpot, or a bigger game like when we played the 25-50, there's no imagine if in a game where you're playing really deep stacked and you get into a hand like that. You take a real bad beat, and you get no bonus paid back. You get no rebate on your bad beat.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Anyway, that went down on Friday night, yet the bad beat jackpot backup is already at 103K here in the Harris Poker Room. So that's what's been going on here. Let's talk about your weekend down in Oklahoma, where you were at the inaugural event of the Native American Casinos Poker Tour.
Yeah, I had never been down to Choctaw before. That casino opened a couple of years ago up in Durant, Oklahoma. It's about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes north of Dallas. It's interstate the whole way up there, a nice, easy drive, and right off the interstate, literally, as you're driving on the interstate, you look to your right, and there is the casino. So it's not hard to find at all. But this thing is like an oasis out there. I was amazed. Went down there, nice, huge casino, totally set up. And then I found it was almost the second casino down to the right. The ballroom they had set up there, which accommodated the entire tournament, had its own restrooms, had its own bar, had the waitresses there, had the massage therapist there, totally separated from the rest of the casino. So there wasn't any of the noises or conflicts there, no smoking, nothing like that. Just a pleasant atmosphere. It was great. Plenty of elbow room in that. And then I went back upstairs and checked out the live poker room. It's actually on a level above the upper casino, its own private room, in effect. It's almost like it's a card room or something. They've got over 30 tables up there and a high-limit table area. And they played the games that you want to play. They had a 1-2-5 and a 5-10. And a 10-25 PLO, all three different kinds of PLO games going there. At one time, four different PLO tables going. They had the no limit, of course, all the normal limits. And the biggest thing on the no limit was a 5-10, but it was still a lot of good action in that. The whole thing was filled. And I guess it's that way pretty much every weekend. Tremendous amount of action, beautiful casino. The rooms are all suites. There's a dozen different restaurants there. Kenny Lambert, the gentleman who runs the poker room, said that this is the reaction everybody has. They come up there and say, where did this come from and why did I not know about it?
I like to hear about people who run casinos who are now understanding how little poker players want to be exposed to cigarette smoke. So when you tell me that it's away from the rest of the casino and you don't get slot machine noise, I mean, that's another thing we're spoiled with here at Harris St. Louis, because we've got windows and it's closed off, and it's really nice in that way. You don't find many other places that are isolated in that way, which make for a much better poker environment. I'm glad to hear that Kenny has been able to do that down there.
Oh, yeah, I was just totally impressed with it. And then the tournament itself. Again, this is the inaugural event. Didn't know for sure what it was going to be or how it was going to turn out. I think they were hoping for like 150 in the main event. We ended up with 324 in the main event.
Wow.
Just literally stuffed the room back there. The day before on Friday, we ended up with 77 people who qualified for it through all of the different satellites, the mega satellites, the sit and goes and that. It just kind of blew the roof off. We were totally amazed. And a huge number of people from Dallas and Texas that journeyed up across the state line. Again, this is just barely over into Oklahoma. It's an easy drive up there. And, yeah, I was totally amazed. Card player, loved the success here. They say that they're going to be out and have another 3, 4, 5, 6 more of these before the year's out, scattered around the country. And I don't know. It was pretty pleasant. I was shocked and amazed.
And then on Sunday, you actually got to do some of the commentary for the live stream of the final table of the main event, right?
Well, originally what we were set up is they were going to play on Saturday, and they were either going to play down to the final table or through 18 levels. Well, they went through 18 levels and still had 51 people left. So they came back on Sunday, and instead of the final table starting at 2, we didn't get to the final table till 8 or 9 o'clock that night.
Wow.
I finally went down and started commentary when there was about 12 people left, two different tables, and continued it all the way till they got down to 3 people at about 2:15 in the morning. And those 3 people worked out a deal, chopped it, and ended the tournament. I'm really glad they did. The gentleman who was in the chip lead at the time, a commanding chip lead, I might add, was a fairly tight, solid player, didn't make very many mistakes, but he was going to be in no hurry with his file of play. We could have easily sat there for another hour or two before that thing would have ended.
Wow.
So when they said that they had reached an agreement, there was a silent applause from us who were losing our voice. and away we went. The only one of the final three, I apologize for this, I don't remember his name. He was a Supernova Elite, a gentleman who played very, very solid on the final table, ran into a little bit of bad luck, but I thought he did an excellent job of it. And anyhow, he ended up finishing in second. But they got to the first prize money and also got this statuette of a bison that was there that was really nice, I have to admit. It was an extremely nice statuette there. And he got his he'll get an entry into the circuit event that happens down there in January. And he gets his face on the cover of Card Player magazine.
Oh, because they were one of the sponsors.
Correct. So they took the pictures of it, and you will see his face grace the cover of it, I believe, in the January issue.
Yeah, that's
instant notoriety.
Yeah, that's a nice little bonus for somebody. Now, I was checking Twitter yesterday, and I saw a guy by the name of Brett Rager, who made the final table down there. He tweeted, Dennis, my friends railing online said you had nice things to say about me. I greatly appreciate it. And then he said, was my ace 10 versus the Kings questionable? Do you remember the hand he's talking about?
I do remember it. I believe he went out about seventh in the final table. He was extremely short stack, and he got a double up, chipped down a little bit, doubled up again. So he had an okay stack. He wasn't one of the big stacks, right? But he was okay. And, yeah, he insta-called a gentleman with an ace 10 offsuit. And, yeah, I think I would have at least taken a deep breath and thought about it a little bit. I might have actually laid that one down against the player he was playing against. He ran into Kings.
Yeah.
But really good guy, played very good poker, and he was wearing a Cardinal shirt. So, you know, he had to be a good guy.
Oh, I saw him. He was sitting in, like, the 9 seat at the final table,
correct.
I think. Yeah. I checked out the stream a little bit, and I saw him. And, you know, Brett, congratulations on getting to 7th, and congratulations to all the rest of the folks there. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show from Las Vegas and from Harrah's St. Louis. We're talking about tournament series. Card Player has teamed up with that Native American Casino Poker Tour. Today, Bluff Magazine announced that they are partnering with the Mid-States Poker Tour, which is planning 8 events next year, mostly in Iowa and Minnesota. They say they want to expand it to a national series. I'm not sure how mid-states go national. I would think once you go to any coast, you're no longer in the mid-states. But anyway, this is another series of tournaments with like a $1,000 buy-in. That's what it was here for our main event at Gateway. I think that's what it was down at Choctaw, right? $1,000 or $1,100?
Yeah, it was $1,000 down there.
Yeah. And so this is going to become the Bluff Magazine Mid-States Tour, and they'll be doing streaming online and using the RFID chips, which we've talked about in the past. So that's one new series that's coming up. Also, the Deep Stacks Poker Tour from the folks at Deep Stacks Live, that's going to launch in February at the Seneca Niagara Casino near Niagara Falls. They have 5 stops planned for next year: Canada, Nevada, Oregon, New York, and Quebec. Joe Stapleton, our buddy who did such a good job with the big game for Poker Stars TV, he'll be in the booth for some of those broadcasts with Tristan Wade, who I think won a shootout earlier this year at the WSOP Europe. We may get Tristan on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about this stuff. And the grinders associated with Deep Stacks. And who else? Is Mattisau with them?
Yes, he is. He is. Tom McAvoy. There's several known pros that are associated with the Deep Stack and do a good job there.
So I guess they'll show up.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess they'll show up at these tournaments around the country too.
I would imagine they will be. So you'll have a group of solid pros that will be there that you can talk about. They'll probably have some of their seminars going on prior to these particular tournaments. And, of course, then you've got a nice tournament to play in.
Yep. The other series I wanted to mention is the folks from LIPS, the Ladies International Poker Series. They've launched a new tour, the U.S. Ladies Poker Championship Circuit Tour, which is not a very good name. Considering when you have LIPS, that's, you know, that grabs you, but the USLPCC doesn't grab anybody. Anyway, they're planning some $350 buy-ins for women around the country, a dozen different events next year, and a championship at the end of the year, and they're going to do one down at Choctaw and one at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City and one at the Nugget in Vegas and one at the Kennel Club in Jacksonville and a bunch of others. So there's certainly going to be a lot of opportunities, and I think in our post-Black Friday environment, people who are looking to play tournament poker are going to have more opportunities than ever before next year. Speaking of tournaments, how about the continued run good of one Jason Mercier, who this weekend took down the Super High Roller event at Bellagio, the 100K buy-in. Last year they had 29 players in it, or not last year, but last spring they had 29 players. This time only 23. And you know you're running good when your name is Mercier and you get heads up with Doc Sands, who, of course, was famous this year for getting so deep with his girlfriend Erica Motino at the main event, and we had them both on this show to talk about that. But Doc Sands gets it all in with a pair of fives, which heads up is a pretty good hand. But when you're Mr. Run Good Jason Mercier, of course you have aces.
Well, he didn't quite run that good the whole tournament. I was told of a hand earlier than that he survived because he had more chips. But he actually got it in when Doc Sands was short stacked. He shoved with a king jack. Jason had pocket kings, and he flopped two jacks.
Oh, really?
So that's how Doc Sands made the final table and ended up getting heads up. But then, of course, like you said, he ran his fives into Jason's aces and end of story.
Some of the other guys who were there, Negreanu, Seidel, Ben Lamb, Justin Bonomo, Tom Marchese, Justin Smith, Ike Haxton, they were all in there. Mercier takes down 683K for that. And while we're talking about the Bellagio and the five diamond, congratulations to James Dempsey, who won that event. Defeating a guy from last year's November 9, Soy Nguyen, was the runner-up in that event. Antonio Esfandiari, who won it last year, ran to the final table but couldn't put together the back-to-back. Now, there's one other thing we need to talk about before we break and then get Jean-Robert Bolland in here, and that is some comments made last week by Sheldon Adelson. He is the CEO of Las Vegas Sands, which owns the Venetian and the Palazzo in Las Vegas and the biggest casinos in Macau as well. There was a story in the Las Vegas Sun by John Ralston that says that Sheldon Adelson told the American Gaming Association and Senator John Kyle that he is, quote, morally opposed, unquote, to online gaming. And he doesn't think the technology is there to prevent minors from logging on. He doesn't think it's good enough. He also thinks it'll be an unnecessary distraction next year, and he is against it. This is a reversal from this summer when the New York Post quoted Adelson as saying he was in full support of online poker at the federal level, saying this was a window of opportunity to grow sales. Now, what's going on here, Dennis? Why would Sheldon Adelson come out and say, I'm against it, I'm morally opposed to it?
Well, I don't have any inside information there. My take on it, to start with, is I thought he was jockeying for position, that maybe he wasn't ready yet for his online thing. Maybe he did think there need to be some technical advances made. But nothing has come out since he made that statement that indicate really that he is jockeying just around for position. It is something they can reverse fairly easy as soon as somebody can prove to them that the technology exists, which I think it does. for you to really restrict anybody's ability to get in there underage. I don't know that you can ever totally eliminate it. That would be like saying you'll never have somebody take a drink when they're underage. There may be some people that try to do it, that get away with it a time or two, but eventually get caught. I do think the technology is out there to make it extremely difficult for underage people to get on there. You know, if he's waiting for 100% guarantee, that's just not going to happen. But we'll see what comes out here. I was a little bit shocked when he came out and said that. Of course, Sheldon has had just a little bit of success over in the Asian market and has, let's put it this way, I don't think he's having any money problems at the present time.
Yeah. Now, after he made his remarks, some people in some online poker forums were calling for a boycott of the Venetian Poker Room, which I think is a terrible idea.
Absolutely. I don't agree with that at all. I mean, Kathy Raymond, Tom Young, the other guys in there run some great tournaments, take care of the players, they do everything right. This is Sheldon's opinion, and he's more than entitled to it. And if he doesn't want to get involved with the online, that's his choice. I honestly don't think that just his opposition, while it may hamper it a little bit, is going to stop something from going forward. So
that's the question I was going to ask you. Question I was going to ask you. Has he done something here that will affect the future of online poker? I agree with you that it will not.
No, I don't think so. There is one other thing I really want to talk about, too, when we get done with this subject, if I could.
Okay, go ahead.
So I received an email from a fan, and I wanted to make sure that if I stated something wrong last week, that I corrected. Now, I don't think I did. I think maybe he just interpreted it wrong. But anyhow, I want to just clarify it. We were talking about possible consequences last year that concerning Full Tilt and concerning that if the DOJ assumes the assets of Full Tilt and what they're going to do and what are they going to do about the phantom money and everything else. And one of the things that I brought up was that it's going to affect different people different ways. And if somebody has tax liens or hasn't paid their child support or a ton of other things that way, you know, that's going to come into play, and it will. But now, by no means was I supporting deadbeat dads or anything like that. Please don't take it that way. We were just stating the possible consequences and that it was not a simple case of Full Tilt, hands over the assets to the DOJ, and the DOJ just turns around and sends the money to everyone. There could be other consequences out there, and we wanted to make people aware of those.
Yep.
So please don't misinterpret that. I am not supporting people that don't pay taxes or don't pay child support or anything like that. That was not my intention at all.
I'm glad you clarified that. That's a great point. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with the guy who is broke living, JRB. He's living like a millionaire, even though his bankroll is zero. Jean-Robert Ballon joins us as the final table continues from Las Vegas and Harrah's St. Louis here on Five Night of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And don't forget, every podcast we've done is available. We're up to show number 150. You'll find every one of our shows available via iTunes and on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Coming to you live from the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, I am Paul Harris. My partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. And I'll let you go ahead and introduce our guest for today, Dennis.
I'll be happy to. Our guest today is a poker pro. He's famous for being a contestant on Survivor's China Season about 4 years ago and for being broke but living like a millionaire out here in Vegas. That helped him to get over 30,000, that's right, 30,000 Twitter followers who he keeps updated with his bankroll total, with the women he's partying with the games he's playing, and everything else. He made a deep run in the WSOP main event this summer, finishing 65th, as well as some other caches. And these days, he's playing a lot of mixed games and playing quite a bit at the Aria. Jean-Robert Ballon, welcome to the final table.
Oh, man, great to be here, guys.
Nice to have you. What's your bankroll?
My bankroll right now is about $12,000. And, I've been kind of struggling with getting away from zero recently. It's been hard to get off the ground.
How much of that came from beating Ben Lamb at pool last night?
Yeah, I got the boys last night, he and Nick. Give me a little bit of a hard time in the pool, but last night I started shooting lights out, and those guys started bleeping, so I beat him out of a few thousand. It was nice.
Sweet. Hey, last week when I texted you, you said, give me a little bit. I just got done playing 30 straight hours. Is that typical for you? I don't typically play that long anymore. I used to, but not anymore. 30 hours straight?
You know what? It's not. It's not. I used to do that all the time as well. I never do that, but that was an unusual night. We had a very special customer, you know, betting monster amounts, like five times pot. You know, there was no way I was going to quit until this guy went home.
And did you bust him?
Oh, no, he's not bustable, I don't think. I mean, this guy was like 400 million deep. He couldn't be busted, I don't think.
So what are you playing? What are you playing? Because we have people who are following you, and you talk about some of the games you play, but you don't really go into details about the stakes that you're normally playing, and when you're in that mixed game at Aria, what the games are.
Well, you know, we have our regular mixed games, which is a 400-800 mix. Part of the game that I basically made popular over there was the mixed game. It was a 200 mix. Then we got to go up to 300 mix. And then right around then, I was having bankroll issues myself, so I couldn't afford to play anymore when the game got kicked up to 4,800. So once in a while, I play with the 4,800 mix, but, you know, obviously with the 12,000 bankroll, I can't afford to do it unless I'm being staked. And sometimes we'll have, like, a really big no-limit game that you know, I might get staked and play for a smaller percentage or have some sort of makeup deal. And that's separate from my regular bankroll. Like, if I have a nice score, then my bankroll will take a nice little bump. But yeah, that's something that it's interesting you said that we don't necessarily talk about some of the high limit games that we play, because, you know, sometimes when people are playing really high limit, they want a little bit of privacy in there. I tweet as much as I can, you know, make public as much as I can, but there's a comfort level that not everybody feels comfortable, like, letting everybody know what's going on.
But what are the actual games you're playing in that mix?
In the mixed games that we're playing, usually the mix includes, like, a limit hold'em, a stud high-low, deuce to seven triple draw, and then my favorite, which is Badoogie. And then recently, there's a couple new games that have become very popular. One's called Badoosie, and another one's called Badacy. And basically, those are hybrid games. They're like a combination of deuce to seven low ball or ace to five low ball, and then Badoogie in their split pot games. Half going to the best Badoogie, half going to the best low hand. And those are becoming extremely popular and basically included in all the mixes now. You know, a lot of people are like, what is that? I've never heard of it. But now they've become very, very regular games in our mix.
I can just imagine you sitting there and somebody makes a comment, what is that? And your eyes light up and you go, well, let's play it for a little while.
Right.
I'll teach you.
Now, you know, and you're exactly right. And you know, people enjoy those games so much. But sometimes new players or potential fish may be turned away from a game because they're so unfamiliar with a game like a Badacy or Badoosy. So, you know, I, as a player that's been around for a while, I'm always, like, open to make any kind of adjustments or changes for somebody who's not a regular to the game.
But you're still playing No Limit Hold'em. I know you played in a charity event this weekend, the All In for CP, and you had tweeted that
what
you
won. What a great event that was.
Tell us about that.
Well, that was one of the guys that I used to play mixed games all the time with. His name's Herschel. His son is handicapped, and they have this charity event for guys like him and people, you know, in his spot that it brings out all these celebrities and high-limit poker players. And I mean, it's such a great event. I'm really glad I participated this year. I hadn't made it in the past, and I think I'll be at every single one from now on.
That's Jacob is his son's name. And the all-in for CV, that cerebral palsy, which he's been afflicted with all of his life. And he's still an amazing guy. He's so upbeat and always smiling. And, you know, you just have to take my hats off to him. I've supported that tournament for the last couple of years. Was unable to make it this year. Had to go down to Oklahoma, prior commitment. But I know that Cheryl Hines was there. I know that a ton of other people showed up there. And thank you very much for being there and supporting him. Like I said,
Jake, that was a great gig. Yeah, I look forward to the next one. It was great.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis, and our guest, Jean-Robert Belland. Go ahead, Dennis. You were going to say something.
Well, I was just, you know, going to reiterate about the poker players and how much they support so many different charities, and I'm just so proud of them all the time. I don't care whether it's an Annie Up for Africa or Put a Bad Beak on Cancer or the all-in for cerebral palsy or whatever it is, it always seems like you can count on the poker players for their help. We've done so much for some of the
correct.
Yeah, I mean, just hats off, guys, and well done. That's all there is to it. So that's my little soapbox. I'll go back to the regular now.
So, yeah, you know, these high-limit players are very, very generous. And, you know, it's really great, you know, to see them contributing like this and of their time and their money. It's a great thing.
So, Jean-Robert, I understand you started up your own site last week. I took a look at it, jrbpoker.com. And one of the things that it says on there under the Coming Soon banner is you're going to have a bankroll management app, which when I first heard it, I thought, That's got to be a joke. The guy barely has a bankroll himself and hasn't been able to manage it. But tell us about the app. And I know
exactly
you've got a sense of humor about this sort of stuff. So tell us about the site and about the app.
You know, I think that pretty much anybody who knows me or knows my game, you know, knows that my struggles in poker have had mostly to do with bankroll management issues. And, you know, I'm a more than proficient player and probably should have a lot of money behind me at this point. But, you know, I'm one of these guys that's not afraid to put it all on the line if I think I'm in front, if I think I have a little bit of an edge. It was interesting, like a couple of weeks ago, I remember Kenny Tran saying that if it was all his money, even if he was an 8-to-1 favorite, he wouldn't put his money in that situation because, you know, it could take him broke. And I'm just thinking, man, if I'm ever like a 2.5-to-1 favorite, I'm putting all my money in. I'll put my money in if I'm a 1.5-to-1 favorite. You know? So, you know, we joke about me putting out a bankroll management app, but at the same time, it is, bankroll management is so important if somebody wants to make a living playing cards. And, you know, what my biggest flaw is also a big opportunity for, myself and guys like myself to get some sort of structure in the way that we manage our role. And, you know, I the plan is that when I do put out this bankroll management app, that, you know, there'll be a series of guidelines and rules and that I will abide by these things. And everybody's going to watch me, you know, turn my basic, you know, basically nothing bankroll into $1 million.
Cool. I've got a little bit of a question, a little bit of a different subject here. You're talking about bankroll management, though. We've seen these tournaments go from $10,000 buy-ins to $25,000 buy-ins to high rollers and $100,000. This summer, the WSOP is promoting a $1 million buy-in, of which there is no poker player around that really has a legitimate bankroll to do that. Now, is this good for poker? Is this bad for poker? Is this a shot in the pan that will never happen again? What's the limits for these buy-ins?
I actually think it's wonderful for poker. Not because the kids can afford it, but just because it's going to draw so much attention to poker. And again, we were just talking about different charities that, poker players have supported. I know that they're raising a lot of money for, I don't remember exactly what the cause was.
It's called One Drop.
Go ahead.
It's Gila Liberté's One Drop Water Charity.
Right. Right. And, you know, and one of the guys that I told you about that was playing with us, he told me he wants to play in this tournament. So I haven't even gotten a hold of Guy yet, but he's got one more guy signed up. You know, I expect that they're probably going to end up having like 40 players in this. And the few poker players that do actually play, I can't imagine any of them having 100% of themselves in this tournament. I mean, even a guy like Daniel, I imagine that he's going to piece out at least, 50, 60% of himself in that tournament.
Can you explain a little bit, since we're talking about staking quite often and you get backers who stake you and all this sort of stuff, for our listeners who, you know, they're smaller limit players than you play, but guys who play 1-2 or 2-5 or 5-10 or maybe even something a little bit larger than that, can you explain to them how cash game staking works?
Well, you know, there's a little bit of a difference in piecing out, like, you know, on this $1 million buy-in tournament. Let's say that a guy like Phil Hellmuth feels comfortable putting $100,000 of his own money in, which would, you know, basically take care of 10% of his buy-in. There's plenty of people out there that would like to participate in Phil's performance. So they'll put up cash for, you know, 5%, 7%. And if Phil and his friends feel like Phil's a significant favorite over the field, sometimes they'll pay a premium on that percentage. So even though Phil's 10% is $100,000 for this $1 million buy-in, he might be able to get $120,000 for 10%, or maybe $150,000 for 10%. You know, so it really depends on how much he and his friends or people that are participating feel that he has an edge over the field. Sometimes you have individuals that have no money to be able to participate themselves, so they do what we call a staking or backing deal. Oftentimes, when I have no money, like in a cash for a cash game, I'll have an individual or a group of individuals sometimes put up a stake. Let's say it's $10,000 to play a cash game, and whatever we profit, we're going to chop the winnings 50-50, and 50% for myself, 50% for the stake horse. And if there's a loss, then that loss will have to be made up before any winnings are divided up.
So if you use their money to buy in for $10K and you double it to $20K, they get their $10K back and you split the other $10, so you walk away with a $5,000 win. But if you buy in for $10K and you end up losing $5 of that, you have to make up that full $5K to them in the future?
No, the full $10K in the future. So if you were to stake me for a $10,000 tournament in the Epic tomorrow and I bust out and don't do well, and then we do another one in the Bahamas and we lose $15,000 in buy-ins in the Bahamas, so I'd be $25,000 in makeup, then all of a sudden in the World Series, you know, I have a nice cash for like $70,000. Well, that first $25,000 would be repaid back, and then we'd divvy up the profit, which is exactly what happened to me in this year's main event. I cashed out 65th place, which actually pays $110,000. You know, you hear 65th place, but I mean, $110,000 is a nice score. But in the preliminary events going up to this event, I played 20 preliminary events, and I had a few caches, but they were for minimal amounts. So I actually, of the $110,000 that I cashed, $70,000 of that went into makeup. So we only chopped up $40,000, so it was $20,000 actually for my pocket when all was said and done.
That's the best explanation of staking and backing I've ever had on this show. Thank you for going into such detail. That was great, wasn't it, Dennis?
Absolutely, yeah. Simple, concise, and able so everybody can understand it. Talking about the main event this year, you did finish 65th. Do you have a different strategy for that main event? Do you play that different than you would a normal tournament? for day one, for day two?
You know, I think like anybody that plays poker or poker tournaments, you know, I do get more excited about the main event than any other event, and I really look forward to it. Fortunately, you know, I got 65th place this year. Last year, I got 73rd place. The year before, I made it deep in the day four or something like that. But, you know, I feel like I've done pretty well in these tournaments. I think that, do I have a specific strategy? I'm not sure. But, you know, I feel very, very comfortable whenever I'm playing. You know, I don't feel nervous. I feel like I'm on top of things. And anytime I'm at a table, you know, I feel quite confident that I'm favored to go far.
We're talking with Jean-Robert Bolland, the broke living poker pro here on the final table. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis. Let's talk about some people who've sent in some questions. You are so incredibly popular. By the way, you retweet your haters as well as the people who like you and your own life as well. Why do you include the people who are bashing you?
Well, you know, I feel like a lot of the people that follow me love me, and a lot of the people that follow me hate me. And I have if the guys that hate me, I don't think they really hate me. They might be like a little envious of some stuff that happens, or they might feel like I don't really deserve the breaks that I've gotten. And, you know, and I don't mind them being envious of that. And, you know, me retweeting, you know, their hate, a lot of this is not genuine hate, I don't think. You know, they also know that I'm able to take a little bit of razzing. And, you know, I appreciate it. Actually, some of that stuff is hilarious. It really is. These guys love to beat up on me. I think it's great.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, good for you for having the cojones to just put it all out there. And I think they are jealous, particularly when you're tweeting pictures of the fabulous-looking women that you party with all the time. I think there's definitely some jealousy there. A guy just today said he'd be willing to stake you in a 5-10 game in exchange for VIP and bottle service at Hayes, which is the nightclub at the Aria. And you told him no. Well, here's a guy who wants to stake you in a game. Why would you turn that down?
You know, it was the presentation of that tweet was like a carrot on a stick, and like, hey, you know what? If somebody runs into me here at Aria, or you know, they look me up, of course I'm going to try and help you get VIP treatment. But I'm not going to do this because you're doing some sort of favor for me by staking me in an event. I mean, if we choose to do business, like if you choose to stake me, it's got to be because you and I both feel like it's a profitable situation. I'm not interested in anybody doing business with me because they want to do me a favor. You know, this is something that we have to both believe is a profitable situation for us.
A little bit of a twist here again. You know, Jamie Gold and how he did his talking at the table several years ago, and now we got the Jamie Gold rule and the rest of that there. You do quite a bit of talking at the table. What information are you trying to gather at it, or are you just having fun there?
Oh, I really feel like the more you talk to your opponents, the better feel you have for how they're going to be playing against you. You know, just by little conversations I'll have with people before a tournament day even starts, you know, I can kind of get a vibe for, that's a guy that's going to want to check raise, you know, me or with nothing, just so he can write home to mom and say, hey, I did this to Jean-Robert. And then you have other guys that are so friendly with you that you feel like, you know, they're just going to bet their hand pretty true against you and kind of tell the truth. And it really is an edge. You know, Daniel's a guy that's really good at that. You know, he gets really good vibes and from people as to you know how their feeling is towards him, and he can deal with them accordingly.
Isn't part of it also that you're trying to throw people off their game a little bit? If you can get under their skin just a little bit, and they're going to act differently or act more aggressively towards you, that's going to work out to your advantage in the long run?
I do believe that that does happen. And that was I was more into that part of the game a few years ago. Right now, I don't really do so much trying to intimidate or be a jerk. Partly because I'm much more in the spotlight these days. You know, I feel like I'm more of an ambassador for the game. I'm also an ambassador for Aria Poker here. You know, I can't. You know, now I got to be like, I have to represent, you know, what I'm out there for.
Dennis, what's your take on talking at the table? You are always engaged with people. I saw that during the Six Max event here last week at the Gateway Poker Classic.
Oh, I'm doing more and more of it. Number one, I enjoy the company. It's a chance literally to make new friends at the table. You get all sorts of feedback for our radio show, for how it's the term of structure is, what people like, what they dislike, everything that way. And you do get a little bit of a feel for the people. If you just find out what their occupation is, where they're from, things like that. I mean, an accountant is more likely to be a little tight than a car salesman. You know, just generic things like that. And you have nothing else to base it on when you first start out a tournament, when you're sitting at a table. After you play with them for an hour or two, after you've seen their betting patterns and such, it's fine. But to start with, you have to make assumptions. And the more information you have, the better assumptions you can make.
It's information, and information can only help. And by the way,
Absolutely.
Do feel like when you get a genuine, friendly vibe from somebody, these people are less likely to make plays at you. That's my experience.
Oh, I absolutely agree with it. They don't want to knock you out. They want to keep you there, and they don't want to make an enemy of you.
Yeah, they're enjoying your company, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big, big tip for anybody playing a deep stack event or a main event.
Jean Robert, I've got to ask you about a hand from earlier this year that I know is not a great memory for you, but I know you can look at it in hindsight and share some perspective on it. It was the hand on Poker After Dark where you went broke at a table that was a star-studded table, and you made a move with ace-queen at the wrong time and got called by ace-king. But the part of the hand that sticks out in my mind was you had put, when you came over the top, you know, it was a multi-way pot, and you came over the top for, I think, 75, 78K, something like that, and Phil Hellmuth laid down his hand where he only had a few thousand invested, and he actually had the best hand with a small pocket pair or something. And he was bitching and moaning about how, I can't believe you made me lay down the best hand. And you turned to him and you said, Phil, how much did you lose in this hand? I just lost everything I have. You're a multimillionaire,
right?
And I just lost everything I have. Can you tell us about the aftermath of that hand? Because we all saw how it played out on Poker After Dark, or if you haven't seen it, you can see it on YouTube. What's the aftermath, the rest of that story?
Well, it's really interesting. That hand, by the way, I do not at all love the way I played that hand. I have had good reason to play it the way I did. You know, when you're watching this stuff on TV, it's hard to get a full vibe as to what's going on at the table. Chris Ferguson was squeezing us out of every single pot. Now, I've played with Chris before, and he's a pretty tight, solid player, and he's not one that I necessarily see making a lot of moves. But in this format where it was $100,000 buy-in and everybody knew I was on short money, I had every dollar I had on the table and had myself pieced out for the other 35%. You know, I felt like people, Brandon Adams and Chris Ferguson, might be pushing me around a little bit. And, you know, in hindsight, I could see that Chris actually had a big hand every single one of those times. But I just decided this is just too much. He's just re-raising and squeezing every single time. So I actually, when I believe Peter Jetton did raise, Phil Hellmuth called, I just called on the button, and then Chris Ferguson re-raises out of the small blind. You know, it just, I just didn't believe he could have a hand again in this spot. And my gut told me that he was full of it. And, you know, sometimes at poker you trust your gut. And, you know, this time I thought my ace-queen was in front. It wasn't, and I got trapped and lost a what is it, like $170,000 pot because of it. But, you know, like I said, I don't love the way I played the hand, but, you know, it was one of those things where I had a read and I went with it. It was wrong. Usually my reads are right, but in this spot I was wrong and it cost me a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it straight up busted me.
Was there any more with you and Helmuth after that hand?
You know, honestly, if you watch, you know, Phil's reaction, like when I checked him, you know, he threw his little tantrum as to like he got off of his pair, and he, like you said, he only lost like 6,000 or 5,000 in the pot, something like that. And if you watch his reaction, actually, he completely piped down and shut up as soon as I said that.
Yeah,
he never said another word about it, and you know, and that's his way of apologizing for being out of line. I actually, you know, Phil does. He gets so involved in these hands, and it's so intense for him. He tends to overreact sometimes in spots. You know, he looks a little dorky on TV in some of these spots, but he's actually a very, very good guy, a very nice guy. You know, he's one of these guys that, you know, also people do love to hate, but anybody who's known Phil, you know, at all would really, really like him if you really got to know him.
Well, Jean Robert, I'm sorry we are completely out of time for today. I know Dennis had a lot more questions for you, and I know I did as well, and so did our Twitter followers and yours. So we'll just have to have you back sometime in the future and talk some more.
I'm definitely down, man. This is great. Love talking about it. Love this format. This is great.
Thank you so much. Jean-Robert Belland, his new site is jrbpoker.com. You can look forward to his bankroll management app, and we appreciate his time today. Dennis, next week we're going to do a year-in-review poker show with Chad Holloway from Poker News and Kev Mathers from All Vegas Poker. That'll be good. Are you playing any tournaments between now and then?
Maybe some local ones, something like that. Don't have anything planned, to be quite honest about it. I've got Christmas back with my folks, and then Christmas up in North Dakota with Deneen's folks. So we're going to be doing some traveling, but not for poker.
All right. Thanks.
And heading to the Bahamas in January.
That's great. Have a good weekend. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to the Final Table Poker Show live every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and on demand anytime.